I'm Kim.
And I'm Danae. Welcome to Mysterious Mavens Podcast.
We are a true crime podcast, but we also like spooky, scary things. And most importantly, self-care for yourself. What did you do this week for self-care?
God, I probably should have thought about this before we started. This week, I started rewatching Bridgerton after our conversation last week. So,
how's that?
It's great. I've started calling Ronan Lord Balonin.
So it's going well.
Rony Baloney to Ronan Balonin to now Lord Balonin.
I'm
Lord Balonin.
He'll always be Rony Baloney to me. He'll be like 16.
He's quite hungry.
And like, Aunt Kim, knock it off. And I'll be like, listen, Rony Baloney.
Yeah.
Don't you talk to me that way.
Yeah, that's your name, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I am just calling you by your name.
Yeah. So, and it was kind of like cold out earlier this week.
It's been kind of a weird week.
It was like the perfect time. I was like, I'm just going to like turn the fireplace on.
Because like Sunday was like beautiful and Monday was like even more beautiful. Uh-huh. And then Tuesday it's like lols you thought.
Yeah.
And then Friday was shitty. Just awful. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I've just been chilling. What have you been doing?
My self-care was we had a fun party on Friday for Jess. Yeah. That was a good time. I got extremely hungover though, so that was not fun, but we had a lot of fun. We got to go to that one restaurant, Drift.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
I've never eaten there, and
I've never been there.
Delightfully surprised by how good the food was. Because the cocktails so are amazing.
And the food, like, they didn't have anything that was, like, they did have, like, expensive stuff. Yeah. But, like, all the stuff I wanted, it wasn't, like, crazy expensive, and the drinks were really interesting. So,
yeah.
Definitely gonna have to go there again, and then we went dancing, and it was fun.
So. It was fun.
It's a good time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Spending time with the girls. It's all of care.
Girls night. Also, there was a guy at a dive bar who was like a fucking douche.
Oh my God. This is my favorite thing ever.
We went to Badger's, which is a dive bar. And
but it's not like, I'm sorry. It's not like the diviest of dive bar. Yeah, like it's a dive bar, but it's not like, it's fine.
Yeah. So we go there and we're like ordering drinks and I was like, I'll get this round. And so Jess wanted a Dirty Shirley, which is literally just a Shirley Temple with a shot of vodka in it. And we asked for that, and he's like all like, ugh, like doesn't, I don't know. He just like had an attitude.
So weird.
And then I was like, okay.
And he wouldn't make eye contact with anyone but Danae.
Yeah, it was so weird. And I was like, okay, what kind of beers do you have? Like, I could see the, like, handles, you know.
But you couldn't read what they
were. I couldn't read what they were. Like, I saw the first one was, like, PBR, and then there was, like, an IPA, and I was like, I don't want an IPA. And I was like, what other ones do you have? And he's like, this is a dive bar. We have PBR. And I'm like, I can see that there's other handles. What do you have? And then he, like, finally, like, spit it off, like, oh, we've got this, and this, and I was like, okay, I'll have a shock top, like, fucking relax, I understand it's a dive bar.
And then he started walking away before I could order a drink, and do you remember, I was like, what the fuck?
No, it was weird, you're and like, then, I guess I'll just, you know,
hide. Guess I'll just chill here, because we had just had a pickle shot, and it was awful, so gross. It wasn't even good. So the guy, like, walks away, and I, like, look at Danae. I'm like, will you order me a drink? Because, like, he was not going to take a drink from me.
No,
order
he
for
was
me.
Being so weird.
He was so not going to. And so you were like, oh, could I get a whiskey sour, which is the most dive bar drink? And he's like, this is a dive bar. We don't have that or something like that.
I couldn't really tell what he said. All I heard was, this is a dive bar. And it was like, mumble, 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 sour, mumble, mumble. And I was like, okay,
so I just got a Blue Moon like you did, because I was like, this is stupid.
And he was very
he's the reason why we didn't stay there.
No, he sucked.
So, yeah, if you work at Badgers and you...
And you don't know how to make drinks even though you're a bartender.
Maybe quit.
This is a dive bar.
We weren't asking for anything fancy. It wasn't like a martini. A fucking whiskey sour is the most dive bar drink you can get.
Also, like, stop mansplaining to me what a dive bar is.
Yeah. This isn't that much of a dive bar. It's off South Broadway. Like, maybe chill out for a second. I was saying it was... Yeah. Men are trash. Never forget it.
So anyways, that was that.
Yeah, that was weird. But
everything else was fun, though. Everything.
Oh my God, it was so fun. But we have an inside joke out of it. Like, this is a dive bar.
This is a dive bar. We don't do that here. Okay.
You could have a dirty shirt.
Would you like a tip?
Yeah.
Although I did still tip him like 20%.
Well, yeah, because that's who we are.
Because I'm not a dick.
Yeah.
Okay, what are you telling me about this week?
So this week, I'm telling you about Scott Kimball. And this is a re-record. So I know you know who Scott Kimball is now, but like last week you were like...
I was like, who is that?
Who the fuck is Scott Kimball? And on listicles, like, you know, listicles like craziest... serial killers in every state, like just stuff like that. I always see his name pop up.
Yeah, I've never.
And I'm like, and you know, like obviously, like we know a lot about true crime, but I never heard about him. So I was like, you know what? Obviously, this has got to be a crazy story. So I'm just gonna talk about that this week.
And it's local, right? It's Colorado.
Yeah, it's in Colorado, kind of like Littleton, Denver area. So
crazy.
Yeah. All right. So Lori McLeod was spending an afternoon at a casino in Blackhawk. Blackhawk is like near Golden, and Golden is kind of west of Denver, so it's probably like for us to get to Black Hawk it would be anywhere from like 45 minutes to an hour, like from Littleton area.
From Littleton?
Yeah. Well, it depends on how close you are to C-470.
Yeah, I mean, depends on traffic.
Yeah,
but it's too. Like a gambling town.
It's like
casinos and
like
spas.
They call it like Colorado Las Vegas is what it's been called. So
it's not that grand though.
No. So it's Colorado Vegas, and she saw this man walk in with his mother and he was taking care of her. She thought that was so sweet. People in the casino noticed he was looking at Lori, and Lori was told to give him her number, and she thought, why not? He looks like a good guy. He's like taking care of his mom.
Chemistry is palpable.
Oh, chemistry can taste in the air.
Oh, I can see the fireworks in your eyes.
They're so beautiful. So Lori at this point was divorced and she had a teenage daughter. And ironically, when she gave him her number, she asked the question, "You aren't a felon, are you?"
You know, casual questions.
Well, I mean we've all
thought it.
Yeah, like I'll ask friends now because I haven't like online dated in years and years and years, but I'll be like, they're not gonna kill you, are you?
Right,
are they? And friends are like, I don't think so. And I'm like, okay,
let's do a background
let's
check.
Let's be careful. So but Scott seemed really great. Like I mentioned above, he took care of his mom. He enjoyed camping, hiking, you know, all the Colorado things.
Right.
Skiing, blah, blah, blah. Like if you're in Colorado, you've done it probably. So they ended up having their first date on Valentine's Day, and he went all out for that.
Dude, that's like crazy though. Like seriously, first date on Valentine's, like
ballsy.
That's some commitment. Like,
yeah.
Cause what if it sucks? And also, like, you'll always remember that, right? Like, that first date I went on...
was on Valentine's Day, like, the day of, like, love and everything.
The day of love, and I barely know you.
Yeah. I'm glad we're spending this time together. So, he did dinner, drinks, opening her car door. Just something Lori didn't see a lot of.
Gentleman type shit.
Right? And he was also not afraid to spend a lot of money either.
Oh.
And it was nice because since the divorce and being like a single mom, Lori didn't really have the money or the means to like go out and treat yourself. Yeah. And he carried a lot of cash, and Lori referred to it as his gangster wads, which I thought was pretty funny. And he was happy to spend it. And it didn't just end with Lori. It also, he spent a lot of money on her daughter, 19-year-old Casey, who is still living at home. And Casey actually really likes Scott, too.
Dude, that's, like, huge.
Yeah.
Especially for, like...
Oh, totally. Know,
blended families and stuff. Like, that's hard.
I think Scott was trying to get on Casey's good side.
And it worked.
Yeah, and it worked like a charm.
Good for him, I guess.
Well.
We'll see. We don't know the end of the story yet.
Right? So, Casey was described as the easiest kid to raise. Aww. She was sweet, vivacious, and was just happy as could be. And her parents' interview was just them talking about how great she was. And she just sounds awesome. And I've seen pictures. She was really beautiful, too. And she seemed to be going places. But around this time, she was pretty much freshly out of high school. And she had been hanging around the wrong people. Mm. We know who those are. And was actually introduced to meth. And she would just go disappear for a few days, out with friends and stuff like that. So at this point, Scott was coming over to Lori's house, spending more time, you know, welcome time, I guess. And Casey liked him. And she was actually cleaning up her act and being sober. She had a job she didn't love, but she was working, working at Subway. And her dad was like, she was like embarrassed to tell her dad. And her dad's like, I'm just glad you're doing something with your life.
Like, yeah, like no one likes their job at 19.
Yeah, you gotta get the experience and everything.
Yeah, you gotta start somewhere.
But it was the best job she could get with her history, unfortunately. But yeah, her dad said he was proud of her. She's working. Good for her.
Yeah.
So things seemed to be going well. However, Labor Day 2003, Scott ended up finding and showing Lori a vial of what ended up looking like meth. And Lori was pretty devastated.
Yeah.
But she went to Casey and the two got into a fight because Casey said that was not her vial of meth and tried to convince her mom, but Lori didn't believe her. And I can understand why.
Well, yeah, like who else's vial of meth would it be? Like,
yeah, exactly. And I can understand why her mom was like not wanting to believe her and stuff.
Yeah.
And Lori wanted to go to the police station. And she was like, I'm going to go get my wallet. And when she did, when she walked away, Casey immediately was like, this is fucking bullshit. And she's like, we're not going to the police station. This shit isn't mine. And she got on her bike and just biked away and left the house. And Lori,
so her
Scott,
mom was going to like turn her in?
Uh-huh. And she's like, let me go get... Yeah.
Okay. She was serious.
Well, she was probably sick of the shit, you know, dealing with it. Yeah. So, yeah. And Lori and Scott went looking for her, and Scott found her a few hours later, and he decided to buy Casey and her boyfriend a motel room for a few days just so they could cool off and figure things out.
Okay.
And Scott said that they would eventually talk again, and Casey called Scott, and she asked to speak to her mother, and... I don't know if she did or didn't speak to her mom, but she was just like, I love you and I'm sorry.
Okay.
Because, like, they had been away from each other for a few days.
So did she, like, admit that it was hers?
No, it wasn't hers.
She literally just
said, it wasn't hers, but she's like, I'm sorry we're dealing with this. Like, I'm sorry you're upset.
Oh, okay. But she was still adamant that it was not hers.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. And during the same time, Casey's boyfriend contacted Lori. And he told her that she hadn't come to the motel the previous night and he was really worried about her. And, you know, and he was like, well, maybe she's spending time with Lori, whatever.
Sure.
And Lori immediately got worried because she thought that Casey was doing drugs again.
Oh, God.
And she said that every person she would see from the back, she thought might have been Casey. So she just was kind of constantly head on a swivel. And she got super concerned when Subway actually contacted her saying that Casey never showed up for work.
Do you know if the boyfriend also did drugs?
You know, I wondered that, but I don't know. Okay. I don't know. But that's like a valid question for sure. So Casey's boyfriend lamented that the last time he had seen Casey, she was being driven to work by Scott. And Subway said that she had never gotten to work that day. However, Scott said that he definitely did not take Casey to work because he was actually getting a camping space for people because they were going hunting, so he was just, like, scouting a hunting spot, so he definitely wasn't there.
Huh.
And there was no way he was the one that took her to work. And Scott was devoted to helping Lori find Casey, and he told her that he was an FBI agent. Just kind of came out of nowhere. It was like, oh, by the way, I'm an FBI agent. Don't know if they had talked about that before, but this was the first time he was really like, well, I can do this because I'm an FBI agent. And he said he would use all his FBI contacts to help find her, which was more than police would help with because she was over the age of 18.
Mm, right. Yeah.
Since Lori felt a lot better that she was getting help from Scott, they decided to go on a trip to Vegas, which I still think is really strange.
No, dude, that's fucking weird.
Your child's missing.
My child's missing. Let's go to Vegas. What?
Yeah, and maybe maybe that was just a way to like blow off steam. I think it's strange, but like strange, I'm not gonna judge her because maybe it was
Her way of like maybe, trying to de-stress. Yeah.
Like I wouldn't do it, but yeah. I also don't have kids and I can't say, but I wouldn't think it was me, maybe her way to, you know. But they ended up getting married while they were in Vegas. Because Lori felt like Scott was the only one on her side. Yeah, I know. Sorry,
like, why are you doing, like, a celebratory thing when your daughter's missing? And your daughter likes Scott. Like, wouldn't you want her to kind of, like, be part of this, like,
yeah,
momentous point of your life?
Yeah, I think it's so strange.
No, that's weird. I don't know about that.
But Lori felt more connected to Scott and, because he was helping her. So I guess that's how she's like, well, maybe we should get married. But I agree with you, like... What?
It seems strange.
And Keith Morrison asked Lori if she felt better about things because she was, like, married to Scott. And she's like, no, I didn't. And...
Wait, what? Oh, you mean, like, her daughter being missing?
Yeah, he was like, well, did you feel better that you had Scott and you guys were more connected now because you were married? And she's like, no, I didn't feel any better.
Huh.
And they ended up honeymooning up in the mountains. I want you to keep that in the back of your mind. Okay. They ended up honeymooning in the mountains in a spot that Scott picked.
Okay.
And this was during Casey's birthday.
Also weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what? Why are you going on vacations and just, like, pretending, like...
Everything's fine.
Yeah, like, that just seems so strange to me.
So, when they came home from the trip, Scott was all excited. He told Lori there were signs Casey came back. What? Like, her necklace being there and stuff moved around. And Lori believed this because, well, she wanted Casey back more than anything. So yeah. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. But she was concerned that Casey was doing drugs. So she was like, maybe would I even recognize her if I saw her again?
Has it been that long?
Well, it had been a few weeks. So she's like, but she didn't know how far into drugs she was. Yeah. So it was just like, would I recognize her if I saw her?
What? Okay, that yeah. also seems...
Yeah, everything doesn't quite...
It's
add up.
Odd.
The trips are odd. The would I recognize her? The so time.
Why would you?
And I don't really know the timeline of this, but I know like they went in their honeymooning, so it's probably not that long, but probably a few weeks.
But yeah, so, like I mean, it would be one thing to be like, oh, well, will I recognize her if it's been like years? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But weeks.
But I don't really know. Yeah. I just don't know the time lapse. It but it seems... hasn't been years or anything.
Yeah.
So at this point, fast forward, it's around Christmas, and Casey would spend every Christmas with her dad. Again, they were divorced.
Right.
And she never ended up going there. But her dad was like, well, I don't want her showing up if she's going to be high or anything, and which makes sense.
Sure.
Because you're around family, you don't yeah. want to have to be babysitting your daughter, so I don't blame him. But she didn't show up Christmas Day, and Christmas night when he was going to bed, there was suddenly a knock at his door, and he got so excited. He's like, oh my God, maybe it's Casey. Maybe she just was late or something.
Yeah.
And it ended up being his neighbor just telling him that his garage door was open,
oh,
which is
disappointing.
Yeah, really disappointing. And he was just hoping it was Casey at the last moment. And Lori at this point knew that life had to go back to normal. And her and Scott end up moving outside of Denver to a farm area.
The fuck?
And they actually started a beef business. They just wanted to get away from everything, I think. So they were like, let's just move out of Denver.
It just seems...
It doesn't make
so
sense.
So weird. Like, they're so weird.
Like, she's gonna go back to the house and like, there's gonna be no one there. Like, what?
Yeah, like, if she does come back, now she has no idea where to find
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. That part doesn't really make sense. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I was listening to this like, why though?
Yeah.
Where was I? So they ended up moving outside of Denver to a farm area, and they actually started a beef business. And during this time, Scott's sons would come visit during the summer. And during one of those visits, his youngest son, Justin, had a carton that fell on him and he got injured. And while he was injured, Scott's uncle, Terry, came to help on the farm because they needed help on the farm. And Terry gave Lori a really gross feeling. She just said she didn't feel, like, safe around him and was ew. Just gave her the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, we all know that feeling.
Yeah. And they don't really get into it, but I guess it's, like, also not really that important to the story. She just said he gave her...
He gave her the ick,
yeah. So, not long after he came to help on the farm, he left. And Scott said that he had won the lottery and... But Lori was like, oh, thank God he's gone.
Just won the lottery. Yeah, I just like, want to. So random.
Yeah. You don't win the lottery all the time. I do.
Like, let me just win the lottery. And
yeah, he won. He won the lottery and then he moved somewhere with a. And it'll go back to that. But he, like, I guess was with some stripper named Ginger or something.
Oh, Ginger.
My favorite Spice Girl. So, yeah, Lori was like, weird excuse, but whatever. I'm glad he's gone.
Okay.
And anyways, as time went on, Lori was still, you know, swimming up the thoughts of Casey. And, you know, their business wasn't doing too well either. So her and Scott kind of started drifting apart a little bit.
Mm.
And so in a town that's like outside 30 miles outside of Denver, like north, it's called Lafayette. It's kind of like a smaller town. They were noticing at a bank that $80,000 was going missing.
Oh.
And there was like these fake checks and all the money was going to Scott Kimball's beef company. And they were like, that's weird that there's just like all this money. And that's called fraud. So there was a fake check that was like at a bank that they like noticed. And they were like, where's this money going? Oh, it's going to this beef business for Scott Kimball. And
it's like signed by it's like to Scott Kimball from Scott Kimball.
Yeah, pretty like, much. But it was like a fake check, but they had cashed it, so like they didn't. And this is like before, you know, they can do like chargebacks and stuff. So that's fraud. But Scott Kimball is not a stranger to committing fraud.
Oh.
Because he had done this in the past and he actually served time in the past for committing fraud.
Dude.
But he had done it in other states.
Okay, but also, like, learn from your lesson, sir. You know, like...
You're gonna get caught. There is a paper trail that goes with money. Like, honey. So, Detective Thatcher had actually gone to the house to talk to Scott after the bank had contacted him. And Lori was the only one there. And at this point, Lori figured that Scott was cheating on her because...
Because he was being weird.
Yeah. But she didn't even care that much. He was just
committing fraud.
Yeah, committing fraud, you know, sleeping with people. She really didn't care at this point. She had, like, been like, she's whatever. She's like,
I have to take care of the beef.
Yeah.
You know?
We gotta worry about this beef. Hashtag things Kim never has said. And she kind of made peace with it, you know, like, was what like, whatever. Fuck? Just, I don't care that he's cheating on me. I don't care about him. You know,
we at have a business together. At least he's out of my hair.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, my God.
And... she just wanted to find out more about this fraud. She was like, oh, there's fraud going on. That's fun.
Huh.
And not only that, but he asked Lori, Detective Thatcher, if she'd be willing to come down to the station to do an interview, you know, to find out that she's not involved in the fraud.
Right.
It's just him alone. It's well, not like...
Well, because if you're married, like, you
100% you know, totally justified in sure. wondering if it's just him.
Is it a team thing or is yeah. he doing this behind your back? Like, what's the sitch?
Yeah, and, you know, also he had heard about Casey missing, too, and he thought okay. that was a little bit weird as well.
Yeah, perhaps yeah. maybe some of this is, like, connected.
So when they got down to the station, it's like the fraud didn't even matter at all. They were talking about Casey, aww. And, you know, she was just telling him, like, she's really upset about Casey still, which
duh, makes she's a sense. Mom.
She's her mom. And she was like, you know, I think Scott's the last person to see her alive. I think Lori maybe subconsciously was wondering if he was involved in
yeah.
some way.
Right, but, well, like, yeah.
didn't
that,
know.
Because why is his name being brought up as like, oh, he's taking her to work.
Oh, says the he's boyfriend. Doing fraud. And oh, Lori now, knows nothing about it. Yeah. What else is he capable of?
Right.
So at this point, but Lori's still like, you know, just like, whatever, he's cheating on me probably. But anyways, so she knew that Scott was probably the last people to see Casey alive. And not only that, but he had been in conversation with her, like, when she was not really talking to her mom.
Right, yeah. He was the last to even, like, hear from her.
Yeah, and her mom wasn't really talking to her because, like, of the drug thing. So she yeah. was like, well, he was still contacting Casey, and I wasn't because of the drug thing, and we were trying to get a break from each other. But the thing that got Detective Thatcher's, like, feelers up was that Lori had mentioned that he was an FBI agent, as he had told her, and... Thatcher was like, there's no way he's an FBI agent. He has a rap sheet like a mile long. Like,
and he was just like,
and the FBI does like extensive background.
He's just
checks.
Like, hey, PS, I was also an FBI agent. Like, what?
But like, if this is the first you're hearing about the fraud, you know, and you think he's a great guy because he's presented himself as a great guy, I could see why you would just believe it, you know.
Well, and she has no reason to not.
Yeah, exactly. So But Thatcher was like, well, he's got a rap sheet. And she's just finding out about the fraud. So for her, yeah, she's like...
Yeah, so this is all new information.
Yeah, so this is new. And...
It's all, like, coming together. Yeah,
Thatcher was like, there's no way. Come on. Like, that's ridiculous. And also, there's suspicion that his stepdaughter had something to do with her disappearance, too. Like, his stepdaughter's missing. And, like, no, he's not... He's not...
Yeah, he's sketch.
And it just didn't add up. So... Thatcher took it upon himself, and he actually called the FBI to look into this. And as we all probably guessed, he was not an FBI agent.
What a surprise.
Surprise. And, but he was an informant for the FBI.
Okay, so there's like a seed of truth.
Yeah, so there was...
He was, like, involved, but he was not an agent.
No, not at all. It's very different.
He, like, exaggerated a lot.
And he was an informant because in the past, he had helped the FBI find some suspects for separate crimes. The crazy part is that Detective Thatcher realized that he actually knew so much more about Scott Kimball than even the FBI knew. But if you're an informant, they don't do as much of a background check on you as they would an agent, of course, because a lot of the informants are people that were
criminals.
Yes, were criminals, but like they'll take your
word. It's like a deal. Like
exactly. Yeah, a lot of it's like a plea deal so you can get out of jail sooner. Yeah. Whatever. So all this culminated into another female named Jennifer Markham. She had also gone missing about 6 months before Casey had gone missing, and they were about 20 miles away from each other.
Oh.
So the circumstances were pretty similar. And she had a 5-year-old son, and she was actually working at Shotgun Willie's, which, if you know, is one of the more popular strip clubs in Denver. And she had a boyfriend named Steven that she really loved, and the two of them wanted to open a sandwich shop. That was like their dream. It's like
sandwiches
and everything, and she just wanted to get out of stripping truly.
Okay.
But unfortunately she had to do what she had to do. She was said to be an amazing mom, and just one day she up and vanished, and that just wasn't much like her. And the biggest lead is that her car was found in the DIA airport parking lot, but there was no record of her flying out of DIA.
Oh, well, and there was that's so sketch. Like, here's your car, but you didn't have a flight.
Which,
like,
you would
what?
See the car at the airport, and you'd be like, oh, she pretty much abandoned her car and went somewhere.
Yeah. Or maybe, like, she would fly somewhere, but, like, if there's no flights, then why is her car there?
Exactly. So, it was just kind of a dead end because, like, there weren't cameras and stuff in that area, so who were they to figure stuff out?
Weird.
So, anyways, her father, Bob, had done a lot of work and, you know, just... keeping her case alive as much as he could, and he had kept in contact with the agents and everything. And one of the agents actually, this is super strange, the story's really weird and it doesn't make a lot of sense, so keep in mind, like, I'm telling you this and I'm like, it doesn't make a lot of sense because the FBI sent him to meet up with an informant, and it's just like, what? And
wait, the dad?
Yeah, the dad of Jennifer was set to talk to the informant to find out more information. The FBI did this setting up.
The informant for what?
The informant that knows a lot about Jennifer's case. So this is just weird because the FBI were like, yeah, you can meet up with this guy and he can tell you about Jennifer's case. It's really strange. Okay. So just know what I'm telling you is really fucking weird. And I even, like, listened to this part a few times. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
A thing?
No, it's not. That's what's weird. It's, like, not a thing.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm confused.
Yeah, so they set him up with the informant that knew a lot about the case, and they gave him a fake name of Joe Snitch.
Okay.
You know, like a religious name.
Joe Snitch.
Yes.
Not an informant.
It's a religious name, Dunny.
Okay.
Beautiful, godly name. And this is how Bob found out that his daughter was actually dead.
What?
And not just missing... I'm telling you, it's strange because why didn't the FBI
tell him this?
But he's like, well, why is this guy telling me all this? Why didn't the FBI
what
tell me this?
What does the informant have anything to do with anything?
It's so weird. This is like why I'm like, this is so weird. It makes no sense.
Okay.
And yeah, he found out she was dead and not just missing, and he wanted her body so he could do a Christian burial. He didn't want her just being laid in dirt somewhere.
Well, yeah.
And he was just uncomfortable knowing her body was just covered by dirt. And Joe Snitch offered to take him and his family into the mountains so they could see Jennifer's body. However,
what?
Yes, I'm telling you, this is the weirdest thing ever. However, Bob just had a really, really bad feeling about it, as anyone would.
Yeah, that's not normal.
And why didn't you tell the FBI with this information when you're an informant also, and you know?
Yeah, why would you not tell the FBI?
What I'm thinking is the FBI is like, yeah, you can talk to Joe Snitch, thinking like nothing's going to happen. And then I think he kind of went off script and like did his own thing that the FBI had no idea about.
That just seems strange that they would like not have him like...
at the station?
Why is he meeting him? It's very informal and very like, it doesn't seem like a protocol.
No, it doesn't. It's weird. That's why I'm like, this is so, it makes no sense. Anyways.
Okay.
So he was like, he had a bad feeling about it, and he knew that if he had said anything to the informant, if he said anything to the FBI, the informant would probably kill him. So he just had a bad feeling all around. In an interview with him, he had said that the only way that guy would know where Jennifer's body was if he was the killer.
Yeah, duh.
Yeah. So Bob does the right thing and he calls the FBI, like, what the fuck was the informant you sent me? And they were just telling him that they didn't really know anything about Jennifer, which is also so confusing. It's just weird. So
did they even know anything about the informant, or did this guy, like,
they knew he was an informant?
The FBI sent me.
Well, I'll tell you why he knows about her.
Right.
Yeah, the whole thing doesn't make sense. Just he met this random guy.
But the FBI does know about the informant.
Yeah, but I don't think they had any idea what the informant was going to tell him.
Okay.
Yeah. So they were just telling him they didn't know anything about Jennifer, which I think is so confusing. Like, why would you set him to talk to this informant knowing that he doesn't know that much information? And Bob told them that this is the guy who killed my daughter. There's no way it's not. And Bob did do something super right in this entire thing. He wrote down the license plate of the man who met up with him, and they actually looked into it, like, what the fuck? And it was Scott Kimball.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm telling you, it's super weird and confusing, but it's, like, good to know, like, okay, so there's a connection. So back to Thatcher, he knew something was going on. He actually called around to see if other bureaus had dealt with Scott Kimball, and he actually ended up talking to an officer in Louisville. And Louisville is like 10 miles outside of Boulder, like north of Denver.
Yeah.
And there was an investigation on the incident that happened with his son, Justin. If you remember Justin.
The crate kid.
Uh-huh. And you remember me mentioning that. And it seems like this was not an accident. It was more like attempted murder.
Oh my God.
So he was working on the farm and a metal grate had fallen on him. And it was said that he pushed the grate on top of him.
And it's like a super heavy, I'm assuming,
yeah,
right?
If
it's attempted murder.
Well, if it's on a farm, yeah, grates are like heavy there. Yeah, yeah. And so he was like, oh no, the grate fell on him. I have to run him to the hospital. And he put him in the Jeep, ran him to the hospital, and he fell out of the fucking Jeep.
Oh no. Were they the Jeep? Like, with no doors?
I don't know. It just said he fell out of the car.
He's like,
there's no details. What? That's what makes me crazy is it's like...
He just is, like, randomly falling out of a vehicle on the way to the hospital.
Yeah, and he ended up getting a TBI from that.
Oh, my God.
But the good news is he survived, and he was able to tell people that his dad had pushed the grate on him. And on the way to the hospital, his dad had pushed him out of the car.
Oh, my God.
When it was driving.
For what reason? Because he was, like, a teenager, right? Like, he wasn't, like...
Yeah, old. He was, like, a teenager. Like, yeah.
Like, why are you trying to kill your teenage son? That's so weird.
Well, in the year and a half we've had this podcast, what have we learned about when people are trying to kill another person?
Life insurance.
$50,000 life insurance policy on a son.
Okay, not that you can put a price tag on someone's life, but $50,000 is, like, not a lot to, like, kill your son for.
And I know we've mentioned this a lot of times, but I don't know if we've mentioned it on the podcast, but, like... Life insurance policies, I think, for, like, parents are smart.
Yeah.
Because if you pass away, like, regardless of if the mom or dad pass away, let's just say it's traditional and the mom stays at home with the kids, the dad now has to find a caretaker, or if the dad stays home with the kids, typically. Or if both parents work, then that's, like, it's bad all around.
Well, you have to, like, pay your mortgage. You have to pay
exactly.
bills.
Exactly.
Like, you're
you
used
still,
to a dual
you
income.
You still have to pay bills, and if you're, like, and if both of you are working, that's one income gone. Or if one of you works and one of you stays home, imagine the person who works passes away, then the stay-at-home parent, like, is screwed.
Yeah.
And if you lose the stay-at-home parent, now you have to, like, hire people to help watch.
Right.
So I'm just saying all around, whether you're a working parent or a stay-at-home parent, either way, you're losing something that you're going to have to make up for with money. So I think it's really smart. Your child, however, is strange because how are they and they shouldn't be. How are they contributing to bills? Why do you need to take a life insurance policy out on your child?
Yeah, that's weird.
If anyone has a reason for why you need to take a life insurance policy out on your kid, I genuinely want to know why. I am actually curious. But I think, as of right now, without having any knowledge, I think it's strange.
Yeah.
But anyways, so back to what I was talking about before, Terry. You know how
Terry was the creep uncle, right?
Yeah, he was the creep uncle that came to stay with them for a short amount of time, and he just suddenly won the lottery and up and left the country. Yeah, well, they assume that he probably didn't go anywhere and Scott made him disappear. Because they didn't really...
What's the reasoning for him? Does he have a life insurance policy on his uncle?
That one makes no sense. That one kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And we're wondering if it's because he was a creep and Terry's like, time to die, creep, or whatever. But they felt like he had something to do with the disappearance.
Okay.
And...
maybe he knew something.
Yeah, it just, that part doesn't really make sense. I mean, none of them really make that much sense because he's not. But anyways, so unfortunately, the cops didn't have enough evidence of what Scott had done to Justin. It was kind of his words against his. And since Thatcher had brought on the check fraud scam, they were like, well, yeah, we got this guy. And that's what they could use to put him in jail and find more information for potential murder charges. Because they knew, they're like, well, murder was potentially happening.
They got to hold him for something.
Yeah, they got to hold him for something. And that's what they did. So the detective that was in charge of the case with Justin, his son and Thatcher were able to go arrest him. Scott Kimball knew that the heat was on and he had actually left town and they were unable to find him.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so they were like going to go arrest him for the check fraud and he was like, nope.
Goodbye.
So during his time of him being on the run, he kept in contact with his wife, Lori. She felt loyalty to him at this point because she's still like...
honey.
Well, she still didn't know all this stuff and, you know, she was like, I'm married to him. And he was still giving her hope that he was going to find Casey. So,
oh my God.
But he had told her he was in Alaska when they traced his calls. He was actually not in Alaska. And that's when Lori was like, you know what? Fuck this guy. He's been lying to me. Because they ended up finding him in Palm Springs, California. So he's lying. Lori's like covering for him and he's like lying to her. And she's like, no, I'm fucking done with this. And they were able to give cops in Palm Springs kind of like a 2-block radius of where he is. And they all worked together to catch this guy. It wasn't like an OJ Simpson status chase, but a chase definitely did happen. And the chase ended up in a field and he had run out of gas. He had surrendered and everyone was thrilled because they were like, oh my God, we got this guy. We're good. So, since this was a financial crime, they were able to kind of pick two categories to place him in. And Booth, who was the detective in the Louisville case, Thatcher was the one in the Lafayette case. But those two were kind of working together because they had had a history with him.
Right.
So, Booth and Thatcher wanted to get him on the biggest charge they could do, which was the... it was like the habitual case, I guess. I don't really understand why.
Habitual fraud or what do
the
you mean?
Habitual fraud, which Detective Booth called the big bitch, which was 48 years. She was like, we want to get him on the
really?
Big charge.
Oh, okay.
Of fraud. Sorry, this is like my notes are confusing.
I wouldn't have expected fraud to be that big of a sentence. Well, I mean, like 48 years is a lot.
Yeah, they were doing everything they could to get the biggest charge just so they could have him away.
Yeah.
So both of the families of the missing women wanted to find out as much information as they could on these girls. And we're talking about like Jennifer Markham and Casey.
Mm-hmm.
And because if you remember, like Rob was Casey's dad and he wasn't even involved in this relationship. So he was like,
okay.
Yeah. So, Bob Jennifer's father had actually talked to the Westword, which is like a Denver centric newspaper that people read. And in the article, it actually came across to Casey's dad, Rob, and
wait,
it connected
is it
the two.
Bob or Rob?
Bob is Jennifer's dad. Rob is Casey's dad.
Oh, sorry.
No,
I was
it's
like,
confusing
what?
As shit. No, it's confusing.
Okay.
So yeah. So sorry. Bob and Rob, Jennifer and Casey's dad, the missing dads.
Okay.
And it connected the two. And the biggest similarity between the two cases is that the last person that had seen both the girls alive had been Scott Kimball.
Surprise! Who would have thought?
And new information had come out that Scott actually had gone missing the same week Casey had gone missing. And Lori had no idea where he was. And it was at this point that Lori had no faith in him anymore and wasn't trying to cover for him. Because she was like, oh yeah, he did go missing right after Casey's thing. But he was going hunting, if you remember. So that's probably...
Oh, he was scouting the spot. Okay.
Yeah.
I was
like, when did he go missing? Like, I know.
But he didn't tell her that? He just, like, fucking up and left and then was like, oh, I was looking for a hunting spot.
Probably, but that's but they weren't married at that point, too.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, like, no, you're still. Yeah. I'd be livid if Keith just, like, went missing and, like, I didn't know where he went. I'd be like, okay, well, fuck you. Yeah. So, So the two fathers of the missing girls went to the police station and demanded that they do something about this because they were connected by one person.
Yeah.
And obviously this person had something to do with both of the disappearances. So earlier I had mentioned Jennifer Markham's boyfriend was Steven, right? Mm-hmm. And this is how they're actually connected, because you're like, how are they connected? Well, here you go. So Steven was cellmates with Scott.
In jail?
Yeah. And Steven was in jail for drug charges, and this was one of Scott Kimball's fraud charges that he was in jail.
Okay.
And Steven was like, I have my girlfriend Jennifer. I absolutely love her. Like, we want to open a sandwich shop when I eventually get out of jail.
Okay.
And I want to get her out of stripping. And Scott was like, oh, I would love to help you. I'll help Jennifer get out of that.
Oh,
and,
my God.
He was going to take her to Washington so she could open a coffee shop, because if she opens a coffee shop, then they can go into sandwich shops.
Why Washington?
If I fucking knew, I'd tell you. I have no idea. Just random, like, was like, yeah, Washington. Okay. Probably just any state.
To get her away?
To get her away. You know, just say.
Also so weird. Like, what?
Yeah.
Let me help you. I'm in here for fraud, by the way. Let me help you start up a sandwich shop. Like, okay.
But if you're cellmates, you probably, like, talked about how successful he was. And he's like, and he could have made up anything.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely a liar. Sure.
Yeah. So how did Scott Kimball become an FBI informant, you might be asking, right? Well, he had said that there were two people that were plotting murder. And who do you think those people were that were plotting murder? And he heard about it and he wanted to tell the police. It was Steven and Jennifer Markham.
Who were they going to murder?
They said that they were going to murder one of the jury members or the, like, judge or the lawyer at Steven's trial. Like, it was one of those people.
Oh, okay.
It was, like, someone in the legal system.
But they weren't, though, right?
No, they weren't.
He's just
making
the shit up?
He's making the shit up so he could, like, get close to the cops.
Got it, got it. Okay.
And Jennifer supposedly was going to be the person that actually committed the murder, but those two were plotting together.
Okay.
Scott was a lot of things, but he seemed very trustworthy to detectives. And he also was, unfortunately, very smart. Like, he knew how to work people. I know you and me are, like, laughing, but, like, you gotta realize we have the whole story. Other people don't.
Yeah, well, and that's what's, like, scary about people like him is when they're smart and they know
Master manipulators are terrifying. Yeah. So, like, you and me laugh, like, oh, he's not that smart. And it's like, well, we're knowing all the pieces.
Yeah.
Thatcher has some pieces. Booth has some pieces. Steven has some pieces. So, like, we're seeing the big picture. He's an idiot. But, like, small picture, he's pretty good at manipulating people. And he knew how to work people, which sounds like it. And he was actually paid by the FBI to keep tabs on Jennifer. They were giving him money to watch her. Yeah.
And she really had nothing to do with any,
nothing
like,
to do with
just,
any
like,
of this.
Living her fucking life.
Yeah. And he's like, she's a murderer.
Okay.
And Jennifer and Steven had no idea that Scott had said this to authorities. They had no fucking idea. They're like, this is news to us. Like, he was like, yeah, so these people are plotting murder. So neither of them knew anything about it. And
what almost like gives him a reason to be like stalking her. If like anyone were to be like, why are you know, like
I have,
if any light were to come of it, then
that's
it's like,
why I made a big point to mention
FBI.
That. Uh-huh. Yeah. The FBI is paying me. I don't even want to do this.
But that's terrifying.
Still had the plan that he was taking her to Washington. They didn't know that he was, like...
He's, like, backstabbing them and, like...
Yeah, exactly.
Working against them in, like, some huge lie that they have no idea about.
And they even had a recorded phone call of her and her boyfriend talking about how she'll be able to support him.
Aww.
It's pretty heartbreaking, actually. Because she's,
yeah,
like...
She's under the impression that she's gonna better her life and, like, this guy's gonna...
And Steven told her she could trust Scott. He's like, you know, he's a good guy. I shared a cell with him. Like, you can trust him.
Oh my god.
And the murder for hire story was obviously totally fake, and Scott only did that so he could get to authorities' good graces, and he was heavily involved with both of the missing women. And guess what? We have another missing person. Oh. Uncle Terry was missing too.
Okay, right.
Place he had told that they'd won the lottery and he had moved to Mexico with a stripper, which wasn't true at all. But Terry was also missing, and lo and behold, Scott was also the last person to see Terry alive as well. Wow. And he didn't win the lottery. So I'm just like stating Jennifer went off with Scott. She disappeared. Casey went to work with Scott. She disappeared. Terry was working with Scott and he disappeared.
Okay, so there's a lot of people missing.
Yeah, so basically. So the detectives actually ended up calling this case Operation Snowball because the case just kept getting bigger and bigger whenever it happened.
Yeah, like every time you turn around, there's a new fucking person.
Yeah, there's a new person. And there's a connection to Scott. It's not like a superficial connection. Yeah. Like, there's, like,
but tracks like, of why it. Is he, like, he's literally just, like, luring Jennifer to Washington so he can kill her? Like, and why is he killing Uncle Terry? Like,
I none just, of it makes sense.
The motives is just like, what?
There is no motive. Yeah, like, there is no motives.
Just fucking with people?
The only one was, like, Justin. But that was, like, his son. Yeah. And he lived, thank God. So, yeah, I thought Operation Snowball was kind of clever. But Lori had kept all Scott's stuff because at that point, they're still married and she hadn't thrown anything away. And he just had random bags. And this is important. There was a receipt from a gas station in Walden, Colorado, which is like a small town kind of in the mountains. And not only that, but he had also left his computer. So what do you think they found on that computer?
I don't know. His plans.
They didn't find ABC Mouse.
They found all his fraud charges and shit. His fake checks.
They found torture porn.
Oh, no.
They found like just pictures of people that were probably dead.
Oh, God.
Just sick stuff, snuff films, just awful stuff. So detectives decide to talk to Scott, and of course he's down because he's obsessed with himself. They have him in jail already, so he's like, they're like, can we talk to you? And he's like, well, yes, I'm so smart.
It's just getting worse and worse.
Yeah, so he agreed to talk with the detectives with no attorneys. And he denied everything, and they actually came down hard on him, and he says, I know nothing.
Okay. Wait, what? You know nothing except for, like, I thought you loved sharing all this fucking information.
I know, right? Well, let me tell you the story, because they were like, there's another story.
Oh, God.
So another connection was made when Scott Kimball was in prison. At another time, he had made good friends with this guy named Stephen Hawley. And Stephen Hawley had a girlfriend named Leanne.
Wait, there's a different Stephen? Jesus.
Yeah, there's a lot of Stephens in our lives, too. And at one point, the two men made an agreement to escape prison and go to Mexico. But Scott was able to get out of jail sooner than Stephen. And he said he would find a way to reunite the two of them in Mexico. Possibly.
Okay, sure.
Do you see where this is going?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So Stephen trusted him and told Leanne to trust Hannibal, because that was his nickname. It was Hannibal.
Oh, God. That's so embarrassing.
And Scott didn't want her to know his actual name, which is also a red flag. And he decided to go by Hannibal, like Hannibal Lecter, who is a master manipulator, creepy and shit, you know.
So weird.
And at this point, when the detectives were talking to him, Leanne had also been missing for years. And she lived in Centennial, Colorado, which is the southern suburbs of Colorado near the Denver Tech Center. Leanne was a very smart girl and had a huge heart. Her family weren't a huge fan of Stephen Hawley. And she knew the plan that Hannibal and Stephen had made and told her family that she was going caving in Mexico. Because Stephen...
So they're just, like, gonna live in Mexico forever with this random fucking guy?
They're in their early 20s. They're just, like, yeah, probably. That was the plan.
Okay.
So, Leanne had sent her dad a message, I love you, before she left, and a few days later, he got a message that her car had been abandoned, and he didn't have any weird feelings yet. He was kind of like, hey, your car was found, like, what's going on?
Hmm.
And he didn't hear back from her, and he filed a missing persons report, because he's like, well, she would at least tell me why her car was found somewhere random. And he did go through her financials and saw movement.
Okay.
And her dad's name was Howard. And he had contacted Stephen Hawley. And he was like, hey, do you know anything about Leanne? Like, I'm not a fan of you, but do you know what's going on with Leanne? Yeah. She said she was going to Mexico. And and Stephen was like, will you contact the FBI?
Because that's not a good sign.
He hadn't heard from anyone either. And he was like, God, really worried. And he told him that Hannibal was a dangerous guy.
He's a dangerous guy, but like, hey, girlfriend, you should trust this man and go to Mexico with
him. Well, he knew he was dangerous, but he thought he could trust him. Stupid ass. Yeah, seriously. So he was like, yeah, will you contact the FBI? Like, this guy isn't safe, but like, I thought he was going to be fine. This story's all over the place. I know it is.
He's a super criminal. He's not safe by any means, but yeah, like, tell my girlfriend to trust him. Like, what?
Yeah. So, you know how, like, they had gone through his computer and they found, like, disturbing images?
Yeah.
Well, they had found pictures of Leanne.
Oh, God.
And that's how they also made the connection that he was one of the last people to see her alive as well.
So that's...
Because, you know, you're like, why is the story suddenly there?
Torturing and killing people.
They're not sure because they thought it was just porn he was looking at, but when they were able to connect him to one of the pictures on his computer, that's when they were like, guys, this is fucking like creepy. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, her disappearance was much like the others, and she was another victim. He was one of the last people to see her alive.
Oh, like, God.
Yeah. So I'm just, like, telling you there's, like, a lot of victims. And it was at this point that detectives realized they were dealing with a serial killer. And he told the detectives that he didn't commit the murders, but he probably could help them find the missing people. Fucking how? How can you find the missing people if you didn't do anything, buddy?
Right. He's and like, I know nothing about any of this, but I will help you
find them. Like, I know things.
Okay, sir.
I will follow my nose like the fucking Fruit Loops.
Good thing they already have him, like, arrested, though, you know? Like,
yeah.
God, what a crazy...
Thatcher was so smart. Thatcher and Booth were, like, already like, yeah, we got this. We're fine. And everyone else, like, da-da-da. He could help them find the missing people. He did slip up in a weird way, though, at one point, because he told the officers that state prison wasn't as nice as federal prison. So what would the charges be if one of the girls was in a federal, like, a national forest?
What?
Yeah.
What?
Because national and federal, like, yeah. Okay. I was like, I should connect.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And the Walden receipt he had mentioned was a way to connect him and the national forest. It was dated one day after Casey's disappearance. In the National Forest, there was 1 million acres, so looking there was going to be insane.
Yeah.
And they asked if they could get a map of the park. One of the cops did. And they said a map was $8. And they were like, can we just have a map where the fucking police... And they're like, it's $8. And they're like,
okay.
Oh, fucking okay. And he talked to one of the park rangers, and he's like, have there been any bodies found? And there had. Because that was probably an easier way than having to cover the area. Just ask if there had been bodies found. And the forest ranger had told them that earlier that year, that season, that a hunter had been out and he was able to find a skull. So they did DNA analysis on the skull and found that that was Casey McLeod's remains.
And did they not, the forest people didn't tell police about the skull that had been found?
Isn't it weird? What? I don't know if they told the cops or
were
not.
Were there
but
different cops, maybe? It's like a different...
I'm wondering if it's like a jurisdictional thing. And they were just like, well, they were able to connect him to the National Forest. And they were just like, had there been bodies found? And it's like, it would have been nice if they knew that. Because there's a lot of National Forests in Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh, wow. The story okay. is kind of all over the place a little bit. Because there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't quite make sense. And it was like hard to find sources. But it's just like, he's connected to everyone. It's so creepy. And, yeah, it was Casey McLeod's remains. So instead of, like, figuring out missing people and, like, trying to connect, and they were just jurisdiction, you know. And news got back to Booth, and she was seeing that this was going to be the way they were able to get Scott Kimball. They were, this is a relative term, happy, and they weren't happy. Like, that's awful. But they just saw that this was a way to put this guy away forever, so.
Yeah. Like, relieved. That
yeah,
they've
relieved.
More on
it
him.
Would be a better term than happy. And, but they were happy that they could bring her home and she could be buried in a safe spot. And, like, her family finally had closure. And something that's just really sick about this, like, the whole thing is sick. But Do you remember earlier I said keep this in the back of your mind? They had gone on a honeymoon.
Yeah.
To the mountains.
Right.
Well, they were honeymooning in the area that Scott had dumped Casey.
Ew. Was he like checking on her?
Yeah, her like body was dumped in the area where they had honeymooned. So that's just sick. And like Lori tells that and she's like crying. And I'm like, oh my God, but like you didn't know. Because she's
so close. Like,
yeah.
Ugh.
So they were just honeymooning near her daughter's dead body. And she had no idea. Like,
yeah.
Think about how many times he encouraged Lori that they were going to find Casey.
What a dick.
How many times did he sit there where Lori was like filled with panic, knowing not knowing what happened to her daughter, and he knew. Yeah.
And like, he's just acting like, we'll find her.
When
he knows damn well she's dead.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Scott had found out that they had found Casey's skull, and the heat was immediately turned up on him, and he agreed to talk to investigators. He agreed so he could see where the charges were going to be placed. He would plead guilty. So this is kind of what they came up with, is that he would plead guilty to white collar crimes, like the financial crimes. And he would get 48 years. There would be no death penalty charges and no first degree murder charges. He would have to plead guilty to second degree murder and had to leave detectives to the last three known victims. So that's Jennifer, Leanne, and Uncle Terry, because they had found, and this was the deal they made with him, that right. He had to tell them where the three bodies were. And so they found Casey. She was like the victim we started the story with.
Yeah.
Jennifer was the second victim, and Terry was the third victim we had heard about. And Leanne was the fourth. I don't know what the actual like times were, but just like how I introduced it to the story. So he just had to lead them to the three bodies. He wouldn't get the death penalty, but he told them, he's like, yeah, I can do that, but you're gonna need helicopters and horses and all the high-tech stuff to find the bodies.
Wait, he doesn't remember? Usually they remember.
It makes no fucking sense, truly.
So, like, do a whole entire search of me, like, not telling you where exactly it is? Like, what?
But I think he almost did that to scare them. Like, oh, we don't want to deal with that. Anyways, so they were headed towards Utah, and they were in Grand Junction, Colorado, which is, like, 30 miles east of the Utah border. And they were headed to the Book Cliff Mountains. The first day, they didn't find anything, but a week later... And they kind of gave up on it. Not gave up on it, but they were like, whatever. And then a week later, they tried again. And Scott was almost leading them to the wrong areas. And then they were like, whatever. And then they waited a month. But they kind of needed his help, which unfortunately...
Well, yeah, like that was the deal. He's supposed to fucking lead them to the bodies.
So they go to a dry creek bed. And Scott is walking around. And they stumble upon a gray hair clip. And there's hair still attached to it. Ugh. And bones next to it, which they figured out was Leanne.
Oh my
they
God.
Called her dad right away so that he could find out from them that she had passed away, not from, like, the news, which I think was very kind of them to do. And they were even able to find the bullet that killed her.
Oh.
So he had shot his victims in the head.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Disgusting. Huh. So the next one they wanted to find was Jennifer, which turned into a bunch of different places. Unfortunately, after a while, they had to call in and they had to let her dad know that they were unable to locate her body.
Oh, wow.
And it seems like Scott didn't really care that much to find the body anyway.
He told the dad that he would take him to the body.
That's, to me, what was really chilling, is that he couldn't lead the detectives, but he was going to take the dad. And I'm glad her dad was like... Fuck no. Like, I'm glad her dad got a bad feeling about it.
Let me go alone with you to find my daughter's body.
Like, yeah, that sounds like a great plan.
Sounds like you're gonna kill me.
Yeah, yeah. So the last body that they needed to find was Terry. So at this point, they had found Casey on their own without his help.
Yeah.
And then Leanne, and now they couldn't find Jennifer, and now they're looking for Terry. And it was at this time Scott had admitted to killing him, told investigators where to find him, and even drew a map. He had dumped his body near Vail Mountain, which is a few hours west of Denver. And they saw a gray tarp under a tree, and his body was partly mummified.
Oh, God.
And they also found the bullet, and it matched the same bullet found with Leanne.
Did he ever end up telling them why?
It doesn't really...
Like, at this point, or he's just like...
He doesn't really get into why.
Okay.
Yeah. I just think, like, because if he liked torture porn, it was just something he probably got off on, which really sucks. And if you remember, part of the deal they made with him was that he was going to plead to second-degree murder, and he was also going to lead detectives to all the bodies of his victims, but he was unable to locate Jennifer. So that deal was void. Yeah.
Sorry, deal's off.
And they would have to renegotiate. He would be sentenced to 70 years in jail.
Good.
Instead of the 48 years, and then, like, probably be on parole after that. And the parents of the victims were able to write impact statements on how they felt about finding out that their loved one was murdered. And I'm sure that was cathartic for them in some sort of way.
Yeah.
And he didn't show any remorse. And I'm sure if he felt any, it was just for him. It wasn't like he felt bad caught, for the victims. Yeah. It was more. Yeah. 100%. And the story should end there, but it doesn't.
Oh, God. There's have fucking you seen, more.
Yeah. Have you seen Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah.
So the end of the movie shows Hannibal Lecter on a tropical island after he had escaped from jail. And he calls Jodie Foster's character, Clarice, who is the investigator who was with him the entire time. And he just shared that he was going to have an old friend for dinner.
Oh, right.
If you remember.
Yeah.
And, like, that's just, like, Hannibal Lecter, like, being creative, whatever, smart, even though he's disgusting. But Scott wanted to...
It's also a fucking movie. Like...
Yeah, but Scott was called Hannibal. So yeah, so I'm just telling you that part,
he's, like, thinking that he's, like, clever and, like... Like, this is some kind of fucking fantasy.
Well,
like,
he wants to follow lives. Hannibal Lecter.
Dumb
so,
idiot. Ugh.
Three inmates, including Scott, decided that they were going to have someone fly a chopper into the prison yard. And that's how they were going to escape. Like, that was even a fucking, like,
that's not
feasible
even an
plan.
Option. Are you stupid?
Like that's not even a feasible plan.
This isn't a fucking movie.
But still, the cops got wind of this plan, and they were able to thwart it before it even happened.
Yeah, because, like,
and it wouldn't have worked anyway, you dummy.
Yeah, who's gonna be like, yo, I'll fly a helicopter into the prison yard and pick you up? Like, what?
Like, that's not how it works.
No.
So, there were also many signs that the four victims that were known were not his only victims. He had written about killing a sex worker, and they actually found a sex worker that had been murdered and mutilated in an alleyway near where he worked. And this is also near where the others had disappeared. And she was all like his other victims. Her name was Katrina. Scott had bragged to his cellmates about killing a sex worker, but he denied that he was actually involved in Katrina's murder.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually ended up doing a polygraph test with him, and he didn't pass. He was the prime suspect and still
That's,
is
like,
to
surprising
this day.
Because for someone of that, like, I don't know, mental capacity where he thinks he's, like, so much smarter than
you
people,
think he'd be like, yeah, I did it.
Well, and you think he'd pass the polygraph.
Like, yeah. Yeah. But sometimes you can't even pass.
Yeah.
So, detectives had said that they believe he committed so many murders that he wasn't linked to, and their guess was between 15 to 21. I can understand.
Oh, my God.
I can understand why they would think that.
Well,
because,
yeah, he's just killing random fucking people. Just
well, he
for,
was
like,
hella connected to the victims that he did kill. Yeah. So, like, there's probably people he wasn't even
that
connected to. That
were
to.
Just, like, victims of opportunity.
And Scott is currently in his 50s and is located at a prison in Sterling. He'll be eligible for parole in his 80s, and I really hope he doesn't get it.
I hope but he dies before then.
Same. And that's the story of Scott Kimball, the serial killer.
Wow.
In Colorado, which is an insane story. What makes it hard is the story's kind of all over the place and the facts are a little bit like, what? But it's like, it's an interesting one that I've read about, but I'm like, I didn't know anything about until like now.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, so, but we're going to post pictures of the victims and everything on our Instagram. That's going to be Mysterious Mavens Pod on Instagram.
Yeah, and if you have stories that you would like to suggest to us, or if you want to tell us about a personal story, or just say hi, whatever, you can email us at mysteriousmavenspod@gmail.com.
We also have a Facebook, and we have a TikTok, and they're also... Mysterious Mavens Pod. We, you know, keep it easy because we're nice people. But yeah.
So hit us up on socials, and
we love hearing from people. It's our favorite.
It really is.
Yeah.
But until next time, self-care yourself.
Self-care for yourself.
Okay, bye.
Bye.